Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
My name is Jackson Reffitt, and I reported the authorities on my dad's, you know, far-right behavior leading up to January 6th, and even though his violent actions were absolutely destroyed my family, now he's pardoned, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm in hiding.
As President Trump defends his sweeping pardons for the January 6th insurrectionists, we'll speak with a young man who fears for his life after Trump pardoned his father, who'd been sentenced to over 7 years in prison. We'll also look at Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the World Health Organization while freezing communications by many federal health agencies and canceling upcoming meetings of the National Institutes of Health and other agencies. Then to the occupied territories, while ceasefires largely holding in Gaza, Israel's intensifying attacks on the West Bank. The Israeli military has killed at least 13 people in Jenin in recent days, while Israeli settlers carry out a new wave of attacks.
What they failed to achieve in Gaza, they are trying to make up for here in Jenin, not only in Jenin. Jenin is the center of resistance and fighting. If they finish the resistance in Jenin, they will finish it in all of the West Bank.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's expanded his crackdown on diversity, equity and inclusion, DEI, revoking a 60-year-old executive order signed by then-President Lyndon B. Johnson, banning hiring discrimination by federal contractors. On Wednesday, the Trump administration also ordered federal employees to report on their colleagues who refused to comply with orders to purge DEI initiatives, threatening adverse consequences for workers who fail to report their co-workers. This comes a day after the Trump administration placed employees in any federal DEI offices on immediate administrative leave. The Justice Department's ordered a freeze on all new cases in its Civil Rights Division. Ongoing cases, including police reform agreements in major cities, will be subject to the discretion of judges. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law called it an unprecedented move that, quote, should make Americans both angry and deeply worried, unquote. Separately, the Justice Department has ordered federal officials to prosecute state and local officials who resist the Trump administration's plans for mass deportations. In related news, the ACLU is suing the Trump administration on behalf of Make the Road New York over its plan to expand fast-track deportations while denying due legal process. The expedited deportation policy targets immigrants who cannot prove they've been in the U.S. continuously for at least 2 years. In more immigration news, both houses of Congress have now passed the final version of the Laken Riley Act, which requires federal immigration authorities to detain undocumented immigrants arrested for certain nonviolent crimes. The bill now goes to the White House, where it's set to be signed as Trump's first law. This comes as the Pentagon says it'll deploy another 1,500 active-duty troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. President Trump signed executive orders rolling back federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act and threatening the health care of tens of millions of people. One order reverses Biden-era efforts to lower the cost of prescription drugs for Medicare and Medicaid recipients. Another order shortens the open enrollment period to purchase health insurance. Yet another executive order rolls back a Biden-era program that made more parents with young children eligible for Medicaid. Trump's also phasing out a program that lowered the cost of health insurance premiums for lower-income families. Meanwhile, Trump has canceled scientific gatherings and panels across federal health agencies and directed all employees at the Health and Human Services Department to halt external communications, including public health advice on diseases like COVID-19, influenza, and norovirus. We'll have more on this after headlines. In more related news, a government website set up in 2022 offering information on abortion access and rights has been taken offline. ReproductiveRights.gov has gone dark since at least Monday, the day of Trump's inauguration. On Wednesday, Democrats on the Senate Budget Committee grilled Budget Office nominee Russell Vogt on Trump's plans to cut Medicaid and federal nutrition assistance in order to offer more tax cuts to the wealthy. In a tense exchange with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, Vogt touted welfare work requirement policies and the Republican-backed Clinton-era welfare reform that ended up doubling extreme poverty and depriving those most in need of essential government support.
It led to caseload reductions, people getting off of welfare, going back into the workforce. And we think that that type of thinking should be applied to other federal programs. And it's informed not only Medicaid, but other programs to be able to encourage people to get back into the workforce, increase labor force participation, and give people, again, the dignity of work.
And you believe cutting off health care encourages people to work when they need to get better health in order to work? It doesn't make any sense.
Again,
and it's been a failed experiment.
OMB chief nominee Russell Vogt co-authored the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, the far-right blueprint to radically reshape federal agencies. President Trump has named former fast food CEO and failed 2017 Labor Secretary nominee Andrew Puzder to be ambassador to the European Union. Puzder was forced to withdraw from consideration as Labor Secretary in Trump's first cabinet amidst allegations of domestic violence and reports of widespread sexual harassment and labor and safety violations at his chain restaurants Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Humanitarian aid groups in Gaza report more than 3,200 aid trucks have entered the Palestinian territory in the first 4 days since the ceasefire agreement took effect. Civil defense workers have recovered the bodies of 162 people trapped under the rubble of destroyed homes and businesses and are working to uncover thousands more. Palestinian officials report Israel dropped around 100,000 metric tons of explosives on Gaza during its 15-month assault, destroying 88% of Gaza's infrastructure. About 20,000 children became orphans, losing one or both parents. More than 40% of families in Gaza are taking care of children who are not their own. On Wednesday, displaced Palestinian families returned to Gaza City, many for the first time in months to find a ruined wasteland.
Our families will return from the south to their blessed land of Gaza City. However, they will not find their homes as they were destroyed by the Zionist occupation. They will find tents that we set up to meet their simplest needs. These tents will welcome the displaced families, hoping to heal some of their pain after seeing their destroyed homes that have now turned into rubble, which used to be filled with families.
In the occupied West Bank, residents of the Jenin refugee camp are reporting constant gunfire and explosions as Israel's deadly raid enters its third day. Doctors and eyewitnesses say Israeli soldiers are besieging two hospitals with medical teams coming under fire and ambulance crews barred from reaching the dead and wounded. Some 600 medical workers and patients are sheltering inside Jenin's Khalil Suleiman governmental hospital with dwindling supplies of food and water. The hospital's director reports three doctors and two nurses were shot on the road leading to the hospital this week. Elsewhere, two Palestinians were killed during an Israeli raid on the town of Berkin outside Jenin. Residents say Israeli troops have begun forcing families to leave their homes as part of a campaign to break Palestinian resistance.
What they failed to achieve in Gaza, they are trying to make up for here in Jenin. Not only in Jenin. Jenin is the center of resistance and fighting. If they finish the resistance in Jenin, they will finish it in all of the West Bank.
Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said Wednesday the West Bank military operation dubbed Iron Wall represents a shift in security strategy that took lessons from the Gaza campaign. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned that Israeli leaders have turned their attention from Gaza to the West Bank, hoping to annex the territory once and for all. Guterres spoke Wednesday at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
Israel, feeling emboldened by the military successes that it has had, to think that this is the moment to do the annexation of the West Bank. To keep the Gaza in a kind of a limbo situation with an unclear form of governance. It is clear for me that Israel is not fundamentally interested in Gaza, it's fundamentally interested in the West Bank.
President Trump has redesignated Yemen's Houthi movement as a terrorist organization. The move reverses Biden's removal of the terrorist label in February 2021 and reinstates the label first imposed by Trump's then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo as the first Trump administration was preparing to leave office. Houthi fighters have attacked cargo ships in the Red Sea and fired projectiles at Israel amidst Israel's war on Gaza. As in 2021, aid groups warn the U.S. terrorist designation could increase the humanitarian crises of hunger and illness in Yemen. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, thousands more people have been displaced in recent days after M23 rebels seized the key eastern town of Minova, a main supply route for Goma, the capital of North Kivu province.
I lived in Minova. When we were told the enemies were approaching, my sister and I fled to Nzulu on foot last Friday. Now the enemy is in Bugulube, and we are fleeing without knowing where we are going, as if we have nowhere to return. Look, my older sister gave birth yesterday. She has a baby, and we don't know what to do.
Aid groups are warning of a deepening humanitarian crisis in eastern Congo as intensified fighting has displaced nearly a quarter of a million people since just the start of the year, half of them children. In related news, Belgium appointed a judge this week to investigate a criminal complaint brought last month by the DRC against Apple in France and Belgium, accusing the tech giant of using conflict minerals in their supply chains. Over 200 armed groups, including the Rwanda-based M23, have been engaged in a protracted violent conflict for control over mines where minerals including tin, tungsten, and tantalum are extracted. In Southern California, another 31,000 people have received mandatory evacuation orders as a new wildfire north of Los Angeles broke out and quickly scorched through 10,000 acres Wednesday. Rights groups are urging authorities to completely evacuate the Pitches Detention Center, which houses some 4,700 prisoners and is in the evacuation zone for the Hughes Fire. Meanwhile, health experts are warning Los Angeles Angelenos who lost their homes in the Eaton and Palisades fires to use extra precautions if returning to retrieve personal items amidst the rubble, as toxic chemicals, including lead, asbestos, and arsenic, are likely present in the ashes. Air quality data shows atmospheric concentrations of lead, which is a neurotoxin, hit 100 times average levels in Los Angeles during the worst of the wildfires. And in the Netherlands, climate activists with Greenpeace celebrated Wednesday after a judge ordered the Dutch government to dramatically cut nitrogen emissions by 2030. Greenpeace successfully argued the Dutch government failed to uphold European regulations limiting nitrogen oxide emissions due to farms, fertilizer, and automobiles.
It's definitely a victory after decades of inaction. I think this verdict really shows that the plans of previous cabinets are not adequate, and now they actually have to come up with a plan. And I think that's very necessary given the current state of nature.
The move is expected to face intense backlash from right-wing parties that form the Netherlands' current ruling coalition and farmers who fear having to reduce their livestock. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Public health advocates across the globe are expressing alarm after President Trump ordered the United States to withdraw from the UN's World Health Organization. The U.S. is the biggest financial backer of the WHO, contributing about 18% of the agency's budget. Trump's decision puts numerous programs at risk, including efforts to tackle tuberculosis and HIV/AIDS. On Monday evening, Trump signed an executive order declaring the U.S. would leave the Global Health Agency.
So we paid $500 million to World Health when I was here, and I terminated it. China, with 1.4 billion people, we have 350. Nobody knows what we have because so many people came in illegally, but let's say we have 325. They had 1.4 billion. They were paying 39 million. We were paying 500 million. It seemed a little unfair to me.
Speaking in Geneva, WHO spokesperson Tarek Yasarevich responded to Trump's decision.
The World Health Organization regrets the announcement that the United States of America intends to withdraw from the organization. WHO plays a crucial role in protecting the health and security of the world's people, including Americans, by addressing the root causes of disease, building stronger health systems, and detecting, preventing, and responding to health emergencies, including disease outbreaks, and often in dangerous places where others cannot go.
In addition to pulling out of the World Health Organization, the Trump administration has frozen communications by many federal health agencies, including public health updates, and canceled upcoming meetings of the National Institutes of Health and other agencies. We go now to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Lawrence Gostin, professor of global health law at Georgetown University and director of the WHO Collaborating Center on Public Health Law and Human Rights. His piece in the Washington Post is headlined, "Trump is withdrawing from the WHO. That's a grave mistake." Dr. Gostin is also the author of several books, including Global Health Security, A Blueprint for the Future. Dr. Gostin, welcome back to Democracy Now! A number of issues to discuss here, a full frontal attack on the scientific medical establishment. Let's start with the organization that Trump is pulling out of, that the U.S. helped to found, the World Health Organization, the significance of this.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me back. For me, taking all of this together, it really is an attack on science, public health and public health institutions. The Trump administration and President Trump signed a blizzard of executive orders, and many of them were deeply consequential about energy and also about immigration. But flying under the radar, I thought, was the most momentous decision, really cataclysmic decision, which is to withdraw from the World Health Organization. We started the World Health Organization in 1948, and for over 75 years, WHO has kept the world and America safer and healthier, and we've been its most influential and biggest funder. I couldn't imagine a world without WHO, and President Trump is really hollowing out that organization, and I believe it's a grave mistake also for American national interests and our national security.
Professor Gostin, actually, could you elaborate on that? What risk does it present to the U.S. itself? It would obviously be catastrophic for global public health, but what does the U.S. rely on the WHO for?
Well, we rely on the WHO for so many things that we never even realize as a population. First of all, and most immediate, is that WHO has a global response capacity. And so wherever there's a hotspot in the world, whether it's polio in Gaza or Ebola in West Africa or Mpox in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you name it, the WHO is there early, and they put out fires before they come to America. And remember, we're not immune. You can't close the border to a pathogen the way that the president appears to think that he can close it to immigration. Germs don't know any boundaries. The other thing I want to mention is I think is even more important, is that WHO has a vast network of laboratories, scientists, and public health agencies that report on data. And we, our pharmaceutical companies, our public health agencies like CDC and NIH rely on that data to develop the vaccines and treatments that we need when the next health emergency hits. Americans are used to being at the front of the line when it comes to vaccines and treatments, with Africa and others at the back. We might find ourselves near the back of the line next time because we're not going to have access to those vital pieces of information like pathogen samples or genomic sequencing data or the emergence of mutations and dangerous variants. And so we can't update our vaccines, we can't create new vaccines, and it will even affect our seasonal influenza vaccines, because every year we use WHO data to update our influenza vaccines.
Professor Gostin, in the same executive order in which Trump said the U.S. would be pulling out of the World Health Organization, he also called for the U.S. to stop negotiations on the WHO pandemic agreement, which some say is even more injurious to global public health than U.S. pulling U.S. funding from the WHO. If you could explain, what is this pandemic agreement?
I can. I don't think it's as bad as pulling out of the World Health Organization, but it is really bad. So in the aftermath of COVID, countries around the world called for a new pandemic treaty, because this pandemic agreement really would be a treaty, to try to make the world less vulnerable to the next pandemic. This would include, you know, deep what we call one health approach, animals, climate, and humans, because, you know, some 75% of all novel outbreaks arise in the animal community. It also includes equitable allocation of vaccines and treatments, and also rapid research and development for them, which is really very important. And then it has financing and other provisions for outbreak detection and response. The United States, for the last several years, has been kind of right at the head of the table. The Biden administration has been very constructive. And they've mediated between the Africa and equity groups and the European Union. We've been the honest broker in the room, and now we're walking away. And the irony is that what we're doing is we're allowing the global rules of the road without defending our national interests, our national values. And we cede leadership to our adversaries. I think one of the ironies of this whole thing is that President Trump has said that China has undue influence on WHO. Well, I've worked with WHO for nearly 40 years, and the U.S. has far more influence than China ever has. But that could change as we pull out of WHO and the pandemic agreement.
Professor Gostin, I wanted to ask you about other moves that President Trump has taken that have alarmed scientists and doctors around the country and the world. The Trump administration's abrupt cancellation of scientific meetings at the NIH and other places, as well as freezing many health agency reports and posts. What public health professionals around the country rely on to assess the health of the American people, including the MMWR, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report of the Centers for Disease Control. Can you talk about the significance of this?
Oh, it's deeply consequential. I don't think people understand how consequential it is. Let me start with health communications. Having access to timely and accurate health messages from trusted public health agencies like the CDC and the FDA is really essential to Americans' public health. Absent that, We can't make good decisions about our health, our nutrition, whether there's a food outbreak, say, of listeria, whether there's a warning about a novel circulating virus or a dangerous spike in COVID cases. These are things that the American people need to keep them healthy. And this will delay those things, and they will make them less true. Just ask yourself the question, who would you trust more to give you information about health than a career scientist at the CDC or the FDA, or a political appointee in the White House that filters scientific information through the lens of politics? It really is outrageous. I'm also a member of several of these scientific committees at NIH, and I can tell you, we're not there conspiring. We're there trying to figure out hard problems that affect the American population. You know, I know that a lot of President Trump's administration's, you know, kind of line is that these are, you know, fat bureaucrats. But I can tell you at NIH, CDC, FDA, these are doctors, scientists, nurses that get up every day and do their best to make America healthier and safer. They don't always get it right, but I would certainly trust their integrity, their experience, and their understanding of science to try to guide us through health emergencies and just everyday health problems that American families face.
Dr. Lawrence Gostin, we want to thank you for being with us, professor of global health law at Georgetown University, director of the WHO Collaborating Center on Public Health Law and Human Rights. We'll link to your Washington Post piece, Trump is withdrawing from the WHO. That's a grave mistake. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. Again, the Trump administration freezing many health agency reports and posts until a political appointee is in place heading the Department of Health and Human Services. Trump's the vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Coming up, as President Trump defends his sweeping pardons for January 6th insurrectionists, we'll speak with a young man who fears for his life after Trump pardoned his father. It was the son who tipped off the FBI about his father after the insurrection. Stay with us.
I'm taking back roads.
By Lucy Dacus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
President Trump is defending his decision to grant full, complete, and unconditional presidential pardons to over 1,500 of his supporters involved in the violent January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Trump also commuted the sentences of 14 members of the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, including Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers, who'd been convicted of seditious conspiracy. On Wednesday, Rhodes visited Capitol Hill to meet with Republican lawmakers after being released from prison. Critics of Trump's sweeping pardons include the Fraternal Order of Police, which had endorsed Trump in each of the last three elections. In a joint statement, the FOP and the International Association of Chiefs of Police said, quote, "When perpetrators of crimes, especially serious crimes, are not held fully accountable, it sends a dangerous message that the consequences for attacking law enforcement are not severe, potentially emboldening others to commit similar acts of violence." During an interview with Sean Hannity on Fox News, Trump defended the pardons.
And you know what they were there for? They were protesting the vote because they knew the election was rigged and they were protesting the vote. And that you should be allowed to protest a vote. You should be allowed to. You know, the day when the day comes.
You shouldn't be able to invade the Capitol.
No, ready? Most of the people were absolutely innocent. Okay, but forgetting all about that, these people have served horribly a long time. It would be very, very cumbersome to go and look. You know how many people we're talking about? 1,500 people. Almost all of them are, should not have been, this should not have happened. And the other thing is this, some of those people with the police, true, but